Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
2 out of 3 young people without jobs. Another sad act in the Greek tragedy. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Let Marketplace be your guide to the modern world. Subscribe to the Marketplace Tech Report podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, this is the Marketplace Podcast for Thursday, the 8th of August. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, in for Kai Rizdahl. Greece is back in the headlines again today. The Prime Minister meeting with President Obama, talking about their bailout and austerity plans, and the country releasing some really eye-popping numbers. An unemployment rate of 27.6%. And for young people who are 15 to 24, it's a staggering 64.9%. That's 2 out of every 3 young people without work. To find out what that's like, we called Eleni Teodorou. She graduated from college 3 years ago. Welcome to the show.
It's my pleasure.
Tell me a little bit about your situation. What does it feel like to be young and unemployed in Greece?
It's a bit stressing, I can say, because, you know, the whole economic crisis that struck Greece the last few years, it strikes a lot of young people because, you know, old people, the age of our parents, people have already had their jobs and you don't feel productive.
How long have you been without a job?
For the last 1.5 years.
And what are you doing to make ends meet, to be able to pay for day-to-day expenses?
I returned back to my hometown because I used to live in another city, a bigger city. But then I was fired, I lost my job, so I had to return back to my hometown to live again with my parents. And we're trying to do other jobs in order to get some money.
What kind of jobs?
I used to work as a secretary in a law office, you know, part-time, but not something steady. The jobs are just temporary. We cannot just be sure about it or be sure about the future that I'm going to have a job next year.
With so many young people unemployed, I would imagine there's a lot of competition for the jobs that are out there.
Exactly. That's true. If I'm not mistaken, 1 year ago, I went to an interview for a position for an English teacher, and it was in a village somewhere in northern Greece. And we were around 400 candidates for one place of an English teacher for some hours in school.
400 people for one job?
Exactly, yes. Only English teachers. And they would take, you know, the most experienced one and not the young one that had just finished the college.
Would you ever consider leaving Greece?
I'm considering it sometimes, yeah, because I used to live in Germany for a half year and I saw that the situation there was better than here. I'm thinking about it. I don't reject it. If things are getting worse and worse here.
Well, Eleni, we wish you all the luck. Eleni Teodorou, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
There's a big legal fight in Richmond, California, with implications for distressed homeowners across the country. The city is trying to get banks and investors to sell them distressed mortgages at a discount. Richmond is using something called eminent domain, taking property for the public good, saying keeping people from foreclosure is exactly that, good. The lenders say this could end up hurting the community. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman has the story.
Here's Mortgage Resolution Partners' business proposition for the city of Richmond. Let's say a homeowner is stuck with a $300,000 mortgage, but the house is now worth a lot less. The city will force the mortgage holder to sell the mortgage at a loss. The homeowner gets to refinance. There's maybe $25,000 left over in profit. John Velopoulos is MRP's chief strategy officer.
So MRP's fee is a flat fee per loan, and that fee is $4,500. We don't share in any profits.
But critics say the investors that MRP lines up for the deal do take a profit, and it's out of someone else's pie, says Christopher Whalen at real estate firm Carrington Investment Services. He says the loser is the original holder of the mortgage note, a bank or bond investor who's been forced to take a bath.
It's rather unseemly for somebody in our business to advocate the taking of property. I don't think that the holder of the note, let's say they're compelled to sell, are going to get good value.
Professor Susan Wachter at the Wharton School says the city of Richmond and its homeowners could also be big losers. Lenders could shun them in the future.
Lenders do have a right not to lend if, in fact, the risks seem too high.
Wachter says if cities succeed in using eminent domain to force banks to sell off mortgages, it could increase risk and decrease lending across the country. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
Wall Street broke its losing streak today with all three indices in the green. We'll have details when we do the numbers. Uncle Sam wants you to sign up for Obamacare. Yeah, forgive the cliche. Because it's exactly what's going on. Some states are getting particularly creative as they try to get people to understand and sign up for the new health insurance exchanges. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer has the story.
If you go to a beach in Connecticut this summer, don't be surprised if you're accosted by someone in a bright orange T-shirt handing you a packet of sunscreen with the logo Get Covered. Roving representatives of Kentucky's healthcare exchange are infiltrating bourbon festivals in hopes of getting Kentucky's uninsured to swallow healthcare reform. And in coffee-loving Oregon?
We just finished up some coffee sleeves, though. I know we're doing that.
That's Mark Ray, creative director at the North Ad Agency in Portland, which was hired to promote Oregon's exchange, called Cover Oregon. Ray also got Oregon musicians to write catchy songs for TV commercials.
Long live Oregonians. We are Oregonians.
The songs don't mention the dry details of signing up for insurance on the Oregon Exchange. You almost don't know what's being advertised until you see the Cover Oregon web address flash up on the screen. The jingles are relentlessly cheerful. Ray says that's genuine because a lot of the musicians are uninsured.
The creative community is often the most underinsured constituency, so a lot of these people felt really strongly about how happy they were that Cover Oregon was going to be launching this October.
All of the exchanges will start selling insurance October 1st, but most haven't started advertising yet. Ray says Oregon started early just to make Oregonians aware of the exchange. The details will come later. Other states, like Maryland, are holding their advertising fire.
We will begin advertising late August by September 1st.
That's Danielle Davis. She's in charge of advertising for Maryland's exchange. Sitting in her Baltimore office, she tells me if you get people all fired up too soon, they might lose interest by the time they can actually sign up. When Maryland's ads do start, many will be aimed at young people who think, hey, I'm young and healthy. Why do I need insurance? Davis will answer that with a powerful weapon. Ads aimed at moms. Because
moms rule.
Davis knows what she's talking about. She has a teenager and a 20-something. She says moms might be able to convince their carefree kids they need insurance.
Mothers of adult males have a very strong influence over the decision-making of their adult children.
But even with that secret maternal weapon, Davis has a big challenge ahead of her. There's a lot of confusion out there. Just a few blocks away from Davis's office, I run into Michael Witherspoon, a chef at a Baltimore restaurant, who's uninsured, very interested in getting covered, and very confused.
From what I understand, it's supposed to be like Canada. Everybody's supposed to sign up for it, and everybody gets free health care.
There could be even greater confusion in the 27 states that have refused to run their health care exchanges, leaving it to the federal government. They're not advertising at all. Instead, private groups that support health care reform are hitting the airwaves, and community organizations are knocking on doors to spread the word. Jennifer Tolbert is director of state health reform at the Kaiser Family Foundation.
there will be greater challenges getting people in Texas, in Georgia, in Florida, and working to get those people enrolled in coverage.
And those states have some of the highest rates of uninsured residents in the country. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
The U.S. is hardly the only country with a heated immigration debate. Britain's government has launched a high-profile crackdown on illegal immigration, which it says deprives lawful residents of jobs. That's drawn accusations of heavy-handed tactics and racial profiling. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
Ilford, in the northeast corner of Greater London, is often described as cosmopolitan. Here on the high street, you can see why. There's every kind of national dress. Saris and salwars, skull caps, burqas, turbans, and flowing white galabeah. So when a large van drove along this street carrying a billboard urging illegal immigrants to go home or face arrest, it caused quite a stir.
It's very crude, it's very crass, it's blatant racism.
Rita Chadha, who works with migrants and refugees, says the government's billboard campaign is deeply offensive to all immigrants in London.
All of this is part of a culture of, you're not wanted, please go away.
Isn't it just like a sign going up in a supermarket saying, shoplifters will be prosecuted? It's targeting illegal activity.
I think the van's a little bit more crude. I think everybody in multicultural London's extremely shocked by this.
The shock turned to anger in West London after immigration officials, in another phase of the crackdown, raided a shopping centre looking for illegal immigrants. South Asian protesters, among them Nimal Patel, angrily accused the officials of harassing anyone with a dark skin.
They're randomly picking black people and asking them where they live, what their name is. They don't have to give this. It's illegal to ask for this.
The protest was not confined to the street. Doreen Lawrence is a revered figure in Britain. She's campaigned against racial injustice since her son was murdered by racist thugs 20 years ago. She's just been appointed to the Upper House of Parliament, the House of Lords. She's expressing disquiet about the crackdown.
Why would you sort of focus mainly on people of colour? I'm sure there's illegal immigrants from all countries, and I just think that's where racial profiling is coming into it.
But Immigration Minister Mark Harper defends both the billboard campaign and the crackdown. He denies that his officials have been randomly stopping black people and checking their immigration status.
We carry out operations based on intelligence and based on reasonable suspicion. And I'm confident everything we've been doing has both been lawful and proportionate to the offences that we're trying to deal with.
And according to one estimate, there could be as many as 1 million illegal immigrants in Britain. Back on Ilford High Street, local white resident James Goddard complains about the influx into his town of both illegal and legal immigrants.
You walk along here, you're lucky to hear anyone speak English. You know, they talk about England, but this isn't England.
He's lived all his life in Ilford and now feels he belongs to a shrinking and beleaguered native minority.
All the press and all the public media keep talking about ethnic minorities, but the ethnic minorities are the white English people that are left behind.
Like most British people, Goddard wants to see a deep cut in immigration, but also, like many Brits, he's repelled by the thought that people are being targeted because of their skin colour. And he doesn't like the van billboard campaign.
It's not a red flag to a bull. It just creates a lot of bad feeling. It's enough bad feeling without stirring it up, you know?
Oh, and you think it stirs it up a bit?
Yeah. Yeah.
The challenge facing the government will be to crack down on illegal immigration without alienating multiracial Britain or undermining the national ideal of fair play. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Coming up, will Beyoncé's pixie cut kick off a new trend?
they'll cut their hair, and then maybe about 2 months later, they're sorry they did it.
But first, let's do the numbers. Wall Street snapped back today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 27 points, 0.1%, to land at 15,498. The Nasdaq jumped 15 points, 0.4%, ending at 3669. The S&P 500 ticked up 6 points, also 0.4%, closing at 1697. Groupon shares soared 21% today. The deal website said revenue is up and it plans to repurchase a big chunk of stock over the next couple of years. Tesla drove up 14% after beating analysts' estimates and delivering more of those fancy electric cars than expected. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 2.58%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Do you enjoy the music we play between stories? Visit the Marketplace music section to browse playlists for all of our programs and to buy those songs on Amazon. A percentage of each purchase goes towards supporting our programs. Find more online at marketplace.org/music.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Friday. The International Energy Agency releases its monthly oil market report on supply and demand around the globe. In Washington, the Commerce Department reports on wholesale inventories and sales for June. And on August 9, 1974, President Nixon officially ended his term, resigning from office. Minutes later, Vice President Ford was sworn in as the 38th president. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, in for Kai Rizdahl. You may have followed the strange, sad saga of Amanda Bynes, former child star, now 27. She's had a very public meltdown over the past year. Her parents want a conservatorship, the right to manage their daughter's finances, make her healthcare decisions, even choose where she lives. Most conservatorships are issued for elderly adults with dementia. But as Andrea Gardner explains, there are a lot of reasons a parent might want one.
It began with eccentric tweets, followed by run-ins with the law. And court documents show Amanda Bynes recently ran through more than $1 million of the fortune she earned as a child actress. But probate attorney Mina Serkin says it's difficult for a parent to exert legal control over a troubled child.
You have to see a significant event.
For Bynes, that event occurred last month when she reportedly set herself on fire in front of a neighbor's house, landing her in a mental facility on a temporary psychiatric hold. That expires tomorrow, the same day her parents ask a judge for what's called a conservatorship. They must prove Bynes can't provide for her own personal needs and can't manage her money. If conservatorship is granted, they would assume those responsibilities.
The moment that you get the ability to manage her financial resources, you're in effect controlling a lot of other things that kind of go with that.
Mother Randy Kay has been there. She watched her adult son's erratic behavior for years with no legal right to manage his money or interact with his doctors. Finally, she went to court to become his conservator. Kay says many mental illness symptoms surface in a person's early 20s, just as they're leaving the nest and establishing independence. That complicates things.
And when the world is telling them they're an adult and you know they need some help, it's very hard because they may have periods of lucidity where they see, I'm fine. And then psychosis takes hold and you worry about impulsive acts. So it is a difficult balance to get the legal right to step in when you need to.
Kay's son was diagnosed with schizophrenia and has rebuilt his life with her help and medication. But she knows what would have happened if she didn't intervene.
Financially, any money he had would be gone, whether it was 20 cents or $20 million. He would just spend it. It's very immediate. He would not have the judgment to understand how to spend that money or listen to anybody's advice.
At Daniel's Place in Santa Monica, mentally ill young adults on their own can get help with anything from psychiatric treatment to a disability benefits application. The center also holds money management classes to help young people become independent and pay off the debts they ran up before treatment, says manager Emily James.
We've had stories of youth buying plane tickets. We've had youth, you know, charge outrageous things to parents' credit cards and really having, you know, their own reasons for doing it behind it. But often the reasoning was not based in a lot of rational thinking.
The center also supports parents who have conservatorships but are still butting heads with their adult children.
You know, money is really looked at as a source of control by the youth a lot of times. So we really have to, you know, help educate the youth about responsible budgeting and spending and also empowering them to be able to do so.
She says mentally ill young adults have the same basic financial hang-up as everyone else, distinguishing wants over needs. Their illness just magnifies that struggle. In Los Angeles, I'm Andrea Gardner for Marketplace.
Detroit still has no clear path out of bankruptcy. The emergency manager, whose job it is to figure it out, is taking a look at the art the city owns. It's housed in the Detroit Institute of Arts, work by Van Gogh, Rembrandt, Warhol. Appraisers from Christie's are headed to Detroit to figure out how much the collection is worth, in case it has to be sold to pay creditors. Graham Beal is the director of the DIA, and he joins me now. Thanks for being here.
Pleasure.
So what is Christie's going to come in and do exactly?
Well, they did start this process a few weeks ago and then called it off. The agreement at that time was that they were going to send up to 20 experts and that they would go into the galleries and look at works of art that carry the credit line City of Detroit Purchase.
Do you have a sense of what those pieces of art are worth?
Well, I leave that, frankly, to others. We regard these works of art as priceless. We like their cultural value. All of this talk about dollar signs means that that's what people see when they look at works of art. So, you know, figures are being thrown around of $2 to $3 billion. Well, that's a guesstimate.
Detroit is $18 billion in debt. Some basic emergency services don't work. If putting a value on some of these pieces of art can help the city climb out of bankruptcy, why wouldn't you want to do that?
Well, because I strongly believe, and others strongly believe, that the works of art are held in public trust and that they are not there to be sold. The problems that we have here in Detroit have been decades in the making. The DIA and its collection has had nothing to do with those problems. In fact, we've been rather a success story. In the last decade or so, we've raised nearly $400 million to completely rebuild the institution. We take off the city books every year what is approximately a $35 million operation that's run on behalf of the city of Detroit with absolutely no cost to the city of Detroit.
Kevin Orr, the emergency manager, has said there's no plan now to sell any art.
Right.
What are the alternatives that he's exploring?
Oh, I don't know. The idea of alternatives are thrown out. The idea that we could rent collections to somewhere else in the world. I heard suggested that some wealthy individuals could buy the works from the city of Detroit and then give them to the Detroit Institute of Arts. Well, that's nice, but I think it's a bit of a fairy tale.
In your view, what does the museum stand to lose from this whole process?
Well, if this evaluation moves to actual sale, the ultimate loser will be the future of the city of Detroit. Last year, we got a tax passed to support the DIA financially. If works of art are sold by anybody, that breaks what is called an operating agreement that my private organization has with the city of Detroit. And if the operating agreement ceases to exist, then that money ceases to come from the three counties. So the DIA will effectively be closed down.
Would you sue to block the sale?
Oh, absolutely. We will do everything legally we possibly can if we head in that direction, and I really don't believe we will. Whoever wants us to sell the art will be watching a long, long legal battle.
What's next for you?
Well, we're doing what we can to size up the situation, but it's very fluid. There are no legal precedents to almost anything that's going on here. So when we say we're monitoring the situation, it sounds like the kind of jargon that's used to avoid answering the question, but that's very close to what we're doing.
Graham Beal, director of the Detroit Institute of Arts, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
Some hairstyles are not just hairstyles. Think Mary Lou Retton or the Rachel, Jennifer Aniston's wedge cut on Friends that was everywhere in the 90s. And today, Beyoncé.
She posted her new look on Instagram this morning. Those flowing locks are gone, replaced by a blonde pixie cut. Will other women now follow Queen Bee? And what'll it cost them? Stan Alcorn reports.
Mary Lou Quinlan was at her desk when I gave her the news.
Okay, I'm looking at her.
Shock that only cut deeper because she's a consultant on women's marketing.
So her hair is so powerful and sexy and defiant and female. And now I'm looking at this pixie chic attitude and I feel a little sad.
To which Beyonce might respond, Beyonce might care if her star power shrinks along with her hair. That's what some people think happened to the show Felicity after Keri Russell cut her curls.
When I walked into the haircutting place, I was taking a leap.
Beyonce, different from Felicity, is such a trendsetter.
Style expert George Brescia predicts hair salons will get a flood of new business doing the Beyonce pixie cut, just like they profited from putting in extensions for fans trying to duplicate her long look. So is the hair extension business in trouble?
Actually, no.
Erica Dotson is co-founder of Indeek, a hair extension company.
They'll cut their hair, and then maybe about 2 months later, they're sorry they did it.
At that point, they may come calling for extensions or wigs. And the same might go for Beyonce herself.
Now, if we see her next week with long hair, I guarantee you that's a lace wig.
Then again, Dotson thinks even Beyonce's pixie cut could be a wig. In New York, I'm Stan Alcorn for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
This final note is for those of you who are seriously wired listening to this show, or at least were this morning. If you buy coffee instead of brewing it, the amount of caffeine you get varies depending on where you go. The website Thrillist did a little investigating. McDonald's had the least caffeine, 9.1 milligrams per ounce, Dunkin' Donuts in the middle with 12.7 milligrams, and the terrifyingly named Death Wish coffee topped the list, 54.2 milligrams of caffeine per ounce, basically enough to keep you awake until October. We've got the chart of all that caffeine at our website, marketplace.org. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow rose 27 points, 0.1%. The NASDAQ jumped 15 points, 0.4%. And the S&P 500 ticked up 6 points, also 0.4%. John Buckley, John Haas, George Judson, Jonathan Karp, Ethan Lindsay, Sylvester Monroe, Dave Shaw, Betsy Streisand, and Celeste Wesson are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is Sarah Gilbert. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and we'll meet you back here tomorrow. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.